Okay, Article 12, Management Structures, on page 21 of the Constitution. And we're talking here about management structures, and some people don't have any concept of what that means. That's kind of it's not something you hear a lot about in churches. When we're talking about management structures, we're talking about structures of leadership. There's a difference between authority and leadership. Authority rules and governs. Leadership can be delegated and accountable to the authorities that govern it. Okay, so every large church needs leadership. It needs some specific sections to be led, specific ministries of the church to be led. It needs leadership for the whole pastoral team. And if you notice under letter A there's a difference between authority and leadership. Management structures provide efficient leadership structures to push forward ministry led by pastors under the authority of the pastoral team governing board. All pastors function under the authority of the pastoral team delegated to the governing board. The governing board is elected, as we talked about last week, by the entire pastoral team, and each pastor is responsible for the decisions of the governing board, as we talked about last week. Now, management structures are those leadership roles delegated to particular pastors or groups of pastors for the leadership of particular ministries in the church. So to make that simple, the youth pastor, Dave Brewer, he has a group of people that do ministry with him. That's a management structure, okay? It's leading the youth ministry. And the way it's currently set up, Dave is accountable to me personally. I'm his supervisor, but also to the governing board, which oversees me and Dave, okay? Does that make sense? Singles team leader. The singles team is made up of three pastors, Braden Greer, Kevin Rogers, and Isaac Hydoski. Again, Isaac's accountable to me. I'm accountable to the governing board. We are accountable to the governing board. So their team is going to strategize. They're going to pray about the needs of the singles, just like Dave's teams will pray about the needs of the youth. They're going to be, theoretically, as an executive pastor, I carry, and I do, because I practically served in so many of the ministries of the church. I really do carry a burden for married couples. I carry a burden for youth. I carry a burden for singles. I've worked in all those ministries, evangelism and outreach. But the reality is not everybody can carry the whole church on their heart in ministry when they're pastoring. I mean, I want everybody to carry each other's burdens, but Dave Brewer is not going to carry this burden of the singles like Kevin Rogers is. Kevin's not going to carry now, of course, Kevin's going to pray for, because all those youth are coming into his sphere, And so he wants them to be well-discipled and well-trained. And we all want revival in our youth, you know what I'm saying? We want revival in our college students, but they provide leadership. They're praying. They go on a retreat, the singles team, and they'll pray about the singles, and they'll seek God for the singles, and they'll come back with their plan for the year and bring it to the governing board, okay? So that's what a management structure is. So we have management structures on our team. I have a role in leadership. The administrative pastor, who's Corby, he basically has his hands in making sure we all do things well, and we can talk more about that later. And his role in helping us. Committees under the same point are an effective way to help the church move important issues forward. And I think we're just going to be doing this more in the days ahead. We have ministries that need to be moved forward, like the grievance policy, like we did last year. We needed to get that moving forward. So we delegated to a committee to really move us forward in that area. And they're able to push ministry forward in an area that the pastors can't necessarily, because they're just doing so much work. And so we have pastors involved in that. We have members of the congregation involved in that. And they're able to really provide a wider base of counsel and assistance to the pastor's elder. We're able to leverage some of the more outstanding gifts in the church. So you have a guy on the grievance committee, has real skills in mediation and arbitration. And he's providing real good counsel there and leadership as we're writing up those policies. That makes sense? And so that's another aspect of how we move things forward in leadership in the days ahead. Article 13, which is our members' meetings. And again, one of the things I've been saying all along as we've been going through this is we have this in writing now, and that's really a big step forward. that these things here, this is the Constitution, that we're going to be at least once a year. That's what the minimum number is for members' meetings. We anticipate having more than that, and I think it's going to be necessary to accomplish the things that we need to do here. So it's not that we're only going to have one. So don't be troubled by that. But here's the things that are going to be covered in congregational affirmations. And I've been asked the question, or how are we going to vote, numerous times, and I don't have the answer to that yet. I wish I did. It may be ballot. It may be show of hands. I don't know exactly. On the more, if there's anything where there's going to be a close vote, of course we'll do ballots. You know what I'm saying? Because we want to make sure we have the exact vote. But if it's a pretty, you know, we have a sense that the congregation is fully supportive of that, we may do show of hands. It just depends upon the context and the issue at that point. So I don't know what we're going to do there, and we'll lead in that as we move forward. Let me just make sure I have this turned. Oh, it is okay. And then the installation of pastors and elders, affirmation of a new lead pastor. As I've said all along, I believe we have the right lead pastor in our church. But in the next time we do that, we get a new lead pastor, the congregation is going to be more involved in the process. Does that make sense? And that's laid out in the Constitution of how that is. There's just some commitments to how we're going to do that so that you'll know that person and you'll be able to affirm, yes, this is a guy that we want to lead us. Out of budget expenses, that goes with number four, the annual church budget. We'll affirm that once a year. But if we want to purchase something or spend a significant amount of money, and it's going to incur a debt to the congregation, that's the kind of thing we want to say, okay, are you guys in faith for this? Well, here's why we think we need to do this, and we'll lay that out for you. We'll have adequate conversations about that. We'll allow you to ask questions, but we'll affirm that with you as we move forward, because that when we take debt out on the congregation, on our church, we want to make sure that you guys are in faith for that and believe that we're leading in the best way possible. And then finally, changes to the Constitution and Statement of Faith, as set forth in Article 15, and then other matters deemed appropriate for congregational affirmation as determined by the governing board. And all members in good standing will be permitted to vote. It means if they're not under church discipline, they're permitted to vote. Okay. Now, the fiscal matters section, just to lay it out, we've had a financial advisory committee for a long time, and we've just really benefit from these men's counsel and input. These are non-staff members. They review our financial statements monthly, and they provide counsel to the governing board. They make recommendations to the governing board on all these things that I've listed here. They and more. We seek their counsel on things other than just financial matters as well. They work with us on the annual church budget. And the compensation subcommittee that is listed here under section 402.8 is not something that is in place yet. This is something that we, this year, the church salaries were set by the financial advisory committee because we weren't able to get the compensation subcommittee up and running. That is what the what was the name of that committee that you led, Corby?
It was a compensation ad hoc subcommittee.
The ad hoc subcommittee recommended this formation of this subcommittee for the future of setting salaries, and we thought that was a brilliant, excellent idea to bring in, because some of the people on this committee were just they're gifted in this area, and they really they're able to, in just a way that's objective, set salaries. So the FAC will recommend and the governing board will approve a compensation subcommittee which shall propose the salary and financial benefits for all church staff. This subcommittee will be comprised of members of the church who possess a background in this area of expertise. So that committee was made up of those folks, and they brought wonderful recommendations. And I apologize that subcommittee's recommendations haven't been published yet. We're just waiting for the final. Someone on the subcommittee has to write them. So we had them, we approved them, but they need to be written up. And
I've owed Kenneth that action item for quite some time.
I'm not throwing him under the bus right now, but he's throwing himself under the bus. So, but So anyway, that is what it is. last article, Article 15 on amendments. Just so you note, before we go to Article 15, go back to Article 1302.2. A simple majority vote of members voting shall be required for all church decisions except as specified elsewhere. Okay, so we've specified in several places where a larger percentage is required. One is with pastoral affirmations, senior pastor affirmations, and this last article is the other place in the Constitution where a larger majority is required. I just wanted to bring that to your attention so you understood sort of the principles here. And all these things were a matter of much conversation, you know, and in terms of, and we can talk about that and why, and I'm going to explain why we felt this one needed to be larger. And that is because amending the Constitution is something that's a significant thing for all of us, you know, and we want to say we want the congregation to be clear and affirming this. We don't want it just a simple majority. If we're going to change the Constitution, that it'll be just a 51 to 49% vote. We want to say, okay, we really believe this is an important thing. When you see that in there, it's like this is really significant. This is a change in our governance. And so it requires a 66% vote, if you note there, of not the governing board, but all of the pastors and elders. So if we're going to change our Constitution or the statement of faith, which is in the Constitution. And this is why we really want to, you know, make sure what we put in the Constitution is related to governance, not just policies of the church. You understand what I'm saying there? This is a document, you know, people have asked me, why don't we put certain things in the Constitution? And I've had to say at different times, well, that's not a constitutional matter. Constitution really is about our governance. And this is a very, very important document for our church life. And before adoption of any governing board, approved amendment to the Constitution must be affirmed by a 66% vote of the membership present at a members' meeting, provided the amendment shall have been offered in writing and shall have been announced from the pulpit at church services for two successive Sundays prior to the vote. The revised church Constitution shall be made available to church members, as will this one. This will be on our website, so it'll be available to you at any time. But any time we revise it, we'll then put that revision on the website, or make it available to you in hard copy if you'd like it. And just like in the other affirmations, you notice the last paragraph here. It's very important because it expresses the heart behind these affirmations. We want to work with you as a congregation. That's our heart in these things. Congress trying to put through partisan issues. We want to work with you to help you to understand why we're making the leadership decisions we are, why we're putting forth the men we're putting forward, and allow you to have questions about that, allow you to express concerns. And any member with a reason to believe that the amendment is not biblically sound or helpful should express concerns to the pastors, elders, as far in advance as possible before the relevant church members meeting. And the board will follow up with any concerns expressed. We will do that adequately. So just so you know, two things about that. We say, you know, the minimum is two consecutive Sundays, but our anticipation is we'll do that long before that, okay? So that's the minimum, so that, and the idea there is that we're not going to just try to, you know, it just prevents from any slippage of anything in, but our heart is to do that well in advance because we want to interact with concerns. And so when we put someone forth, we anticipate full support of the church, because if it's not there, we anticipate hearing that in advance. We should know that in advance. If you have concerns about a man or concerns about an amendment, we want you to talk to us. And the heart behind that is that we will have those conversations, not in secret, but in the open, so that if there's anything of concern, that we'll really be able to have those conversations and come to that members' meeting, you know, pretty much anticipating that the things that are being put forth will be approved. Does that make sense? That's going to be healthy for the church. It's not healthy for the church as if we're leading something and we know there's a significant portion of the church that doesn't agree with it, to put that forth at a members' meeting, right? You understand? We want to build a healthy church together. And so that's the idea behind this. Does that make sense? So I'll stop now and we'll get to questions, but that's kind of an overview of those amendments. So if I could ask the men who are going to assist me to come forward, I would appreciate it. So we will take questions at this time, and let's at least begin with anything on these amendments, these sections of the Constitution, and then we can move to the broader question. So, yes?
Am I correct? Approval of the budget law requires a majority?
That's correct.
Could you explain the reason why the greater percentage wasn't considered, or was probably considered, why did you not settle on a greater percentage for the budget approval?
It was just one of those things that we just felt, in most cases it will be affirmed by a larger one, but...
Again, I think overall... Yeah, and it's a good question, and if there are good reasons to make it larger, that would be wise. But in most of these things, what we would anticipate is we've done our homework, we've done our communication, we've done our job to communicate well. So it's never that. It's not going to be that close. Hopefully, it's going to be a 95% of everyone who just says, yeah, great, I'm for it.
Right. That was why I'm wondering why it wasn't included. Because I would think the budget would be one of those things that you wouldn't want to push through by a 51%.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a great point.
It's a fair question. There's not always a black and white reason for these things, and it's something we can talk about again as we get back, and it would be helpful if people feel that. I would like to hear from others, not necessarily right now, but if you agree with that, to share that with us, write your feedback to us and get that into us. That's kind of what we're trying to hear from you all on. So I appreciate the question.
Again, I think some of this, as Ken said, this is a governing document. And just as we're wrestling through how to manage a large organization with tons of decisions, communicate accurately, there is some, and the fact that to modify the Constitution can really, it will be difficult for us to modify the Constitution. There are things, if we're not thinking it through well, we might actually unintentionally put a restriction in there that, now what? We can't operate. So it just all hasn't been thought through that well. So I took a note.
Well, that might be a good reason, actually, to not put that in there, because there could be some budget issue in the future where some major consequence could ensue if we did not get this decision.
It's a judgment call because, one of the things that I think we all have to keep in mind is this is so much of this is based on relationship and trust, and if we're functioning in percentages like that, if there's a significant portion of the congregation that's saying we have concerns about something, we really want to take our time to listen to that, to talk that through. You know what I'm saying? So that's this. I just want you to hear the spirit behind that. That's really the way we want to lead in the days ahead. So if we were anticipating a significant concern, we'd want to talk that through, and we would. I mean, and you can hold us to that. Really, I mean that sincerely. So.
And I think associated with that are it's like if you're married and you manage a budget in your household as husband and wife, you probably independently make decisions that are kind of generally falling under an operating principle that you work in as a couple and as a household. And similarly, we just not done that well.
That's a good suggestion.
As an organization. I was talking with Bo earlier, a couple days ago, about just ways that we can more routinely communicate information. So, in reality, even issues like budget approval are not—it's not this big landmark thing so much as a continuation of a conversation. You're engaged in that process from the get-go, so it becomes almost a very routine thing. But that's something that just thoughts on even how to do that. So we can, when it comes down to it, present the budget for approval. Everybody's already kind of tracking the same way. So it becomes, we focus on the key issues, just like in your household, do you buy a car this year or not? That's a big issue we got to talk about. The rest of it, we're going to pay the rent. We're going to do we're going to pay for heating, water, all that stuff. And that was pretty routine.
All right, we're going to move on to another question. Yes.
Kenneth, thank you. I just wanted to say, first of all, thank you guys, all you guys, all of you that are working on this, pastors and whoever else, for the effort and the many, many, many hours that you guys have labored over. So I really appreciate that.
Thank you very much, Martin.
I do appreciate that. And I just kind of dropped it. So you probably have told us this many, many times.
Okay.
Sorry for this question, but when do you anticipate having a date?
Okay.
Four answers.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a number of major things we're kind of working through right now. So, it's kind of a difficult question because I don't want to. If I throw out a date, then it's kind of like there's a hope that that's we're going
to
do something there.
Yeah.
So if you can release me from not, I'm not making a commitment to these things. Okay, when I'm saying these things, I would anticipate we may have probably two members meetings in the next 4 months. And so I would say I would anticipate having this confirmed by February-ish, I would think. January, February-ish, that would be our hope. But depending upon what happens in those members meetings and what we hear back from the congregation, we may take a little bit longer, you know. So.
And then just to follow up, do you anticipate having Sunday, I mean, this has been great, I'm sure. Like I said, I've never participated here, but do you anticipate, once it's rolled out, to have a series of Sunday messages or any kind of follow-up teaching to kind of roll this out?
Well, we're in a couple of things about that. Number one, we did a six-part series on polity in February. So I don't think we're going to teach on polity again, and that's on it's online, and I know that was really important to a lot of people, but it was not necessarily something that a lot of people want to hear again. I realize that a lot of that teaching was before this document came out, so now it would be actually helpful for you to go back and listen to it and engage with the document and see, understand the principles behind, the theological principles behind the document, because it's a our effort was to make this a theological document, which is a little bit unusual in a large church to have a theologically driven leadership philosophy. Unfortunately, it's just when you have mega churches, there's not many churches that are theologically driven in their leadership structures. They're largely authoritarian and business management principle driven. You know, if you look at the bylaws of those organizations, so this is kind of a change of function. You know, really, I think it's a healthy thing. So that's why we need to be praying as we're moving through these things as well. So, did I answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, Steve.
Ken did a real good job last week of making sure you responded, repeated the question for the sake of the ticket.
Okay, I'll do that again. Thank you for reminding me. Steve Wisga, for you listening on tape, is reminding me to restate the question, and I appreciate it. This is where congregation and leaders work together, you see? Yes, Todd.
In reference to contacting you guys, is there somebody that got an email or somebody that's heading up everybody's questions? Probably been said 100 times, but who is that and contact?
That's me. So you just write me, and if there's, you know, I'll do my best to answer your question personally. But if I don't get it back, we will definitely consider all. I answered about half of the questions on a couple of posts that I've posted on the members' website. I've given the remainder of the questions from different folks. If you're waiting on a response to the pastors who are with those, caring for those individuals, and I've asked them to get back to them personally to talk to them and speak to them. But if you know, if you would like to have a conversation or ask a question, now is a good time to do that. But if there's a the question is, if you have a suggestion or a question, who do you write to? And that would be me, Kenneth Maresco. So, it's better if we could handle questions here and talk about them. But if you have an edit on the Constitution, there's grammar, or you have a suggestion for a change, those kind of things, send those to me. And I'm going to be compiling those things, and we're going to be going through it in an elders meeting before the ratification of that, just the suggestions of the congregation, and we're going to be talking through those things. And anything that's substantive, and I've done that to, on some of the larger things already. I've already begun to talk to the pastors about them. And
in the Constitution, there's a connection to the members' agreement. So in regards to the congregational, you know, approval for changes, would that, you know, pull in also the members' agreement because of the connection as far as the congregation approving the members' agreement?
No, that would not be a. That's why it's not a part of the Constitution.
Isn't there a connection in the Constitution to members?
Yes.
Obeying the members' agreement.
Yes, under the members, we covered that last week, and we handed that out. The membership agreement, and the question is: is the membership agreement in the Constitution, or is it outside of the Constitution? It is referred to in the Constitution, but it is not included in the Constitution. It's referred to. The membership agreement is the is as we talk about what membership is, it's what we are speaking about at that time is the agreement and becoming a member to this local church.
Right.
And each member signs that as they come in.
Okay, so the member agreement is not discussed among the congregation as far as what would be, you know, what we would.
Are you asking?
Yeah.
Are you asking if there are substantive changes to the members' agreement that there will be some mechanism to have members participate in that?
Yeah. I think that's the question.
I know the question, not the answer.
What are you guys here for?
Just to support you. Right?
That's Christian.
I could tell them what you said 2 weeks ago. You want me to do that?
Why don't you do that?
Yeah, it was really good. Well, I don't remember all the details, but I'll give you a second to think about
yeah.
it. No, I just remember we discussed, we passed out the agreement a couple weeks ago and talked through that, and there were some questions on it. Kenneth referenced in a way that I thought was helpful that obviously you can't hold anyone to something they themselves haven't agreed to, they haven't signed on to. So anything that you and I would have signed over the last however many years we've all been here, we're held to that, you know, what we have signed on to. So clearly if there were any changes in the future, you know, that would be, you know, wouldn't be retroactive in a sense unless we involved you in that and brought you through that and called you to sign and commit to a new agreement. So you can't sort of sneak a new agreement in on you.
Members agreed to something 30 years ago and other members just a fresh agreement and they could be
The question is, if we have multiple membership agreements, does that create multiple membership standards? Let's just articulate. Let me try to address that in a number of different, sort of a few different directions. Number one, we've already simplified the membership agreement from when we originally put it out, and we handed it out last week. And Art asked the question, do you want us all to re-sign it? And I said, well, I don't think that's necessary. There's nothing substantive different. We just simplified the agreement. Basically, it's the same things. And I think in the future, as we're moving forward, I think we are going to be addressing issues of vision, where we're going as a church, you know, and the things in the membership agreement are the core things that we assemble around. You know, it's being involved in the Sunday meeting, because that's where the Word of God is preached. It's being involved in Christian community through small group. It's being involved in serving. Those are the core values of this church. And we're going to be addressing those things. We're going to be talking to them. And we want the membership agreement to really express where we are in that. And so I would not anticipate significant changes to a membership agreement that we weren't going to be teaching to and talking to you about at some point. The core issues are the same in the membership agreement. We may articulate it a little bit differently. We used our new mission statement to articulate those things. It wasn't a substantive difference. And if there is, I would anticipate that we would be very much talking with our leaders and our members about that, and because it would be reflecting some of the values of the church that we'd be changing in, And we'll be teaching to those things. We'll be talking about those things. So it's not an issue of do we have to. It's good leadership is going to teach to those things. It's going to clarify those things. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's the way I would articulate that. Anybody want to add?
Well, we're going to do our very best not to try. Be very conscientious not to sneak anything through. And there's never been that desire. It's just sometimes we have not been effective in communicating changes. And so that's a part of the growth process for leaders, for pastors, and a congregation this size. And so I think the question to your question is, how can we effectively and respectfully make sure that the congregation is walking with us through any kind of changes, whether even if they're fairly insignificant. So mm-hmm. that's our heart anyway.
So,
and I think to the point, it's almost like to a degree a membership agreement is like a contract between parties, and if we can unilaterally change the contract and you don't know about it, that's not right.
So we ought to have a mechanism to say, here's how it's changing.
It would have been that you would have changed it and you would let us know.
Yeah.
Right? And you
absolutely.
Us, and there wouldn't have been a discussion.
Right, yes.
That was the leadership style.
Well, yes, I agree with you. And I think I would say that anything significant we would have taught to, but we're anticipating more teaching conversations, like something like this, where we're talking about our governance, we're answering questions. That's the kind of style of leadership we really want in the future, and we're anticipating this kind of conversation continuing. Yes, sir.
Yeah, it troubles me a little bit. Usually, a founding document is there for the day of the storm.
Mm-hmm.
It describes, you know, who people are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's for when troubles come, so mm-hmm. people can be held accountable. Come back to this is what we said.
Exactly.
Hold before making changes.
Exactly.
So having in things here would be not the good intentions that we all have. It comes when, and I believe we're rewriting these because we went through a storm, and it's like, are we looking at? Here's what we had, went through the storm, and it wasn't good enough. What have we learned by that storm, and be able to make sure that we put in? So, like this, the statement of faith
mm-hmm.
has changed over the years, been written, you know, for the last, you know, I would say 30 years. The statement of faith has changed. Without people even knowing about it, it would just happen. Doctrine has changed with no one really knowing. It's just gotten up. And it's like, here's the new doctrine, and not really an explanation of this is what we did believe, and here's why we're changing, and how, and everybody knowing about it. So as we're writing these new documents, I think having the like the membership agreement, we can all be in, you know, assured right now, but we're coming from a place where we thought we were assured for 30 years of walking together, and we weren't. Put those things in to be able to say it's an agreement, and we're describing our constitution. Here's what the church is. Here's what the leadership is. Here's what the membership is.
Mm-hmm.
And you put in there the statement of faith is in here. Why wouldn't the membership agreement also be in as a founding document? And then if it changes, it's very clear what it would change from. Because when you get into the storm, it's cloudy, what's up, down, around, and then it puts people in a difficult place of who to believe, what to believe, and why.
Mm-hmm.
When it's in here, it makes it a little easier, I think.
Yeah, I think that's the question. I guess the question is why, again, the same question, why is the membership agreement not in here? And I would just say that I think the statement of faith and the membership agreement are two different documents, and their importance are different. I think the statement of faith is the foundation of our church. It's what we believe and the basis upon which we do all that we do. And having it in the Constitution was a conscious decision because it is such an important document, and we do not want to change that without congregational involvement. That's the reason it's there. The membership agreement is really how we're doing life together now. And with different pastors down the road, that can change. Leadership values can change, and things can change, and that will be done.
Well, one thing with the membership agreement that I personally think is lacking, it puts all, it's all membership-oriented. Mm-hmm. Truly in an agreement, it would say, here's the responsibilities of the member, and here's the responsibilities of the leader, the leadership. So you'd see in both that, you know, it's a multilateral agreement, and mm-hmm. so that the member is signing it, but also the pastoral leadership team is signing it, and it would be, here's your duties and obligations, here's our duties towards you, mm-hmm. and that would be in here. I think there's a lack in there.
Well, I would welcome your thoughts on how to improve it. If you want to take a shot at giving some thoughts to us on how to improve it, we would love to receive that and hear that. I think our obligations are in some ways included in there, in terms of one of the obligations that we have toward the congregation is to, when there is sin that is bringing reproach on the gospel, or to the local community, like in 1 Corinthians, when certain men were behaving in a certain way, Paul said, why do you allow that among you? We have an obligation to bring church discipline into certain circumstances. So that's our obligation and our commitment to you, that we will do that. And we ask for a mutual commitment to that when someone becomes a member. Are you willing to submit to that discipline? So there is a mutuality in the Constitution about what the membership agreement is. I just say it's not just a one-way thing. And we've all signed it. We're all members of this church as well. And so it's just an agreement. This is what we're agreeing to be a part of, and this is how we do membership in this church. So, yes, Ken.
I'm trying to state this clearly. Speaking of the statement of faith, I think you guys did a good job in the first class describing how you use this opportunity to tighten it up with some things in mind that have happened and are happening. Because it has changed, and because the Constitution says future changes will require affirmation, should there be a separate part in this approval process where the statement of faith is recognized to have been changed and affirmed, or is incorporated as part of the vote on the entire Constitution?
We could do that, but it will be affirmed when we vote on the entire Constitution as well. So if there were concerns about it, we would really want to hear those now. And, I don't think there's anything substantive that has changed that's anything measurable or changing our theology in any way. We've just added scriptures. We've tightened up language in a few places, and we added the section on marriage. So it's not that substantive that I think we need a separate affirmation process for that. We could do that.
I'm wondering if it might be an area where you might want to just point out clearly, as you have here, that it was changed and why.
That's good.
Without objection, we'd like to just incorporate it and not have a separate vote. But
that's a good, it's a reasonable suggestion. And can you take a note of that? And we'll discuss that.
I think it's important to underline that it's changed and that it's why it was important.
Yeah, that's good. No, that's very helpful. I think we said that at the members' meeting in June, but I'm not sure that I said it as clearly as I said it here in the class.
And I'm just thinking that since going forward, you're saying every change will have to be affirmed.
Yes.
It seems like this is an opportunity to
Very good. Very good.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think I agree with you from the standpoint of not incorporating the members' agreement in the Constitution. I think, but I do hear what he's saying, that there needs to be a partnership.
Absolutely.
Maybe the terms, you know, where we have in the membership agreement, I will seek to, we will seek to. The other thing I would say is that I'm glad to see it says, I will seek to.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want us to not, we have to be very careful about this legalism.
I agree.
Using the words obey.
Absolutely.
Those are really words that we just want to be really cautious about using. So I was blessed to see that it was, I will seek to, because all of us, there are none of us that are going to do all of those things.
Absolutely not.
Time.
So yeah.
I just want to continue to say we need to continue to walk in grace with these things as we move forward.
Absolutely.
What we call documents and actually signing things.
The point that was being made was just that we need to move forward in grace on these things, and you appreciate the membership agreement. And thank you for saying that. That's our heart.
Yes.
in these things. These are to outline what it means to be a member here. These are the values that we're committing to. And again, all the pastors signed the same membership agreement. So just so you understand that. So, yes, Kumu.
Yeah, I just want to get clarification on the role of the Financial Advisory Committee.
Yes.
I think a little earlier you said that they set the salaries for you all for this last year.
Yeah.
My understanding was that they were an advisory committee, that mm-hmm. they don't really set anything or determine anything. They can make a recommendation, but folks aren't bound by
right.
anything they say.
Yes. That's technically the way they are, but we just let them do it this year, and we talked to them about it. This is a transition year, and it will be entirely in the compensation subcommittee. So if the question is, did we change any of the recommendations of the Financial Advisory Committee, we did not.
But it wasn't really having to do directly just with the salaries. It was more, as an advisory committee, are you folks, last week you had mentioned we were going to hear more about how the pastors were accountable to the congregation.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the Financial Advisory Committee, but I'm not hearing that there really is any binding. That what they say isn't binding. Everything is really just a recommendation.
Yeah, I think that's true. I don't think there, in my history of being in this church, that we've ever gone against a Financial Advisory Team recommendation. We take that very, very seriously, and we do not, it's not, you know, that's a very, very important thing to us. So, and you can interview the guys and talk to them.
Can I just follow up? So how many people are on the committee, and is there a rotation, you know, a time period that they serve for, and then they're off and on? And then the last thing on that is, you know, with 5%, folks can spend, you know, anything unless it's more than 5%, you need to get approval. So I think with a $7 million budget, is that where we're at?
Yeah.
So that's really, you can make $300,000 purchases without, you know, saying anything. You can make a series of $300,000 purchases without saying anything. In my budget, that's a lot of money. I know $7 million, that's not a lot, but I would just be more comfortable knowing that it was more, you know, if you were going to make a $300,000 purchase something, you're going to run that by, you know, or even $100,000, you're going to run it by that advisor committee and hear what they have to say.
If I could speak to that, right now, a handful of things. One, the size of the committee, it ought to be 5 right now.
Oh, well, 1 second. What is the size of the Financial Advisory Committee, and why is it a 5% amount? That seems like a large amount. So can you speak to why we chose 5% and what is the reason for that? And does that leave the freedom to just spend $300,000 at a pop without accountability?
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why this is written into the Constitution, that it will be 5 people. Right now it's 4, and we need to find a 5th. Generally, over the history of time, and I've been here 12 years now, we've rotated people through. In the last couple of years, we've brought some new guys on that just their time didn't allow them to fulfill it, so they actually stepped back off. So we've had stability now. The goal is to rotate once every 3 to 5 years. It is an advisory committee, but at the same time, you know, just as we're bringing the budget to the congregation for approval, the advisory committee weighs in, not just on finances, but on the strategy as well. And we have mutually agreed that we don't make a decision against their recommendation. 3 years ago, we gave the Financial Advisory Committee authority to set the salaries because we realized, you know, as an insider board, we oughtn't to be setting our own salaries. So we chose to give them that power. We actually have the authority to take that back if we want, you know, but we feel it's a good check and balance.
But once this Constitution is in place, we will not.
We will not, exactly. And that's why that's in the Constitution, by the way, so we can get that in writing so we don't have that authority. And 5% is a lot of money, but again, the way we make the decisions even now is we do a bottoms-up budget. We will, and we presented it as a dry run this time. By next year, we'll have the congregation approved. And we actually don't do any out-of-budget over $5,000 without
bringing it to the Financial Advisory Committee and getting their input. So, and we don't do anything in compensation without bringing it to their, like if we have a staff member that's just rocking it and we think, well, you know, we should actually give them a mid-year meritorious raise. We'll bring that to the Financial Advisory Committee and get their input. So the 5% to a degree, bring it to the congregation for a vote, it's arbitrary in a way where we've got to pick a number, you know, is it $200,000, is it $100,000? It's what rises to the level of bringing it to the congregation. At the same time, everything we're bringing to both the Board of Elders. Nobody makes any outside decision, no individual pastor. I don't have a decision to go over my budget unless I bring it to the elders and get the elders' approval, even if it's $1,000. So we're trying to maintain a tight control of executing an approved budget and reasonably managing the checks and balances.
So it does go to the Financial Advisory Committee, you know, if you wanted to spend $20,000 on something.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think, is it $5,000 or $10,000? $5,000. Anything over $5,000 goes to the Financial Advisory Committee.
And again, recognize right now that's an internal practice that we have, but that's where we want to maintain those internal practices and get people's eyes on it.
We do have that in writing, though. That's a policy.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a policy. When we're thinking about the 5%, just so you can hear our thinking behind this, because sometimes we do have to spend a lot of money, like on air conditioning units if they go. You know, if the air conditioning units go, we don't want to have to schedule a members meeting to replace them. That's the thinking behind it. The thinking behind it is if that's just part of upkeep. It's not, you know, if in the future, if we want to buy another piece of property, you know, that kind of thing that's going to incur a mortgage or something like that, that's where we're going to be obligated to keep that together. Now, air conditioning units, we're going to have to keep that together too, but we really don't have much choice about that, and I don't think anybody's going to vote against it. You know, just my guess. So that's our thinking behind that, Kumu, just so you understand. That we had a lengthy conversation about that, though. So, yes,
yeah,
Bo.
On the subject of compensation, I'm just curious about the practical outworking of this. So you're going to have a subcommittee that's going to make recommendations, but will the pastoral team have an opportunity to engage that subcommittee to give recommendations?
Yes.
Because there's a disconnect there about
that. Yes.
Yeah, and again, recognize this is a work in process, but even the way it's functioning right now is one of our big conversations, even on the compensation ad hoc subcommittee, was evaluations, job descriptions. Are guys actually being measured against an expected performance? And you know, like any organization, we've had fits and starts in doing evaluations well. We're getting there. And so like this year, we did evaluations. Supervisors provided a recommendation of just at, above, or below. Long ago, we established, I don't know, 6-7 years ago, we established really a pay scale for the entirety of the staff, kind of based on what the National Association of Church Business Administrators does. So we have a baseline almost, just like the federal government, where you live another year, you ought to get a little bump. That bump may be a step up or it may be a COLA adjustment, but there's almost an expectation if all is well and good, and combined with a recommendation on an evaluation of at, above, or below, that gets provided to the Financial Advisory Committee that then weighs in on just, okay, what can we afford overall? How do the numbers come? And then we will meet. It's usually Kenneth and I meet with the Financial Advisory Committee to just answer questions on a particular evaluation, a particular individual, and they get copies of the evaluations just to see if they have further questions.
So when it gets to the governing board level, is it a line-by-line, position-by-position approval, or is it going to be an approval for the whole?
I think the way that it would be done it's a good question. We haven't hit that yet. If we felt, I don't know if that, you know, because this is where the management structures come in. You need leadership, you know, and that has to be delegated by the pastoral team. And we're in this process now of we've created this document, and we're just affirming our own management structures internally, you know, that we want Josh as our senior pastor. I mean, it's just not that anybody's questioning that. Please don't get scared by that or anything like that. But just that it's important. It's important the pastor thinks that it's just we recognize you're our senior pastor. We recognize Corby's our administrator, that Kenneth's our executive pastor. This is what it means. This is what it means. These are the things we want you to be able to do in your leadership position. These are the things we don't want you to be able to do because you're accountable to the board now. And that's what it says here. So that we're having those conversations and tightening that up. And I think this is a part of that. It's like who reviews finally if there is maybe a disagreement on one salary or maybe a guy didn't get enough of a bump. Or and that we would see as a leadership function. It could be a team of men who do that. It could be a group of men who do that. We haven't decided that at this point.
And my final question on that would be, so when it gets to the governing board to make that final decision, mm-hmm. would they consider recusing themselves?
Yes, we will. We will definitely consider that. And that's, you know, it's hard to do that right now. We don't have any non-staff elders, but that's something that we hope we can do. I'm hoping that the non-staff elders will really help us with this. That's our desire and our goal. Someone who hasn't raised a question yet. Anybody who hasn't raised a question? Yeah, Will.
The very last line of the handout from today, he said the congregation has to bring it together. He said something to the effect that this is your part in a lot of these practical changes.
Yeah.
I guess it would help me to hear what you mean by that, specifically in that a lot of these structures, there's a difference between saying we all make a decision together and each play a different function in that process, and saying you make a decision and we hold you accountable for how you do it, help you do it, kind of make sure you don't make a blunder.
Yeah, there is a big difference.
And that's where it would help for me to understand which one you mean, particularly because so far a lot of these come across to me more like you decide and we help you do it than we all do it together.
Mm-hmm.
But that might not be your intention.
Well, I think, you know, as we talked about, and the first question is, how do the congregation and the pastors work together, and how do we see that functioning? And I guess a lot of this does go back to the theology of what elder-led means. And I know this is an issue for you that's very something you think about a lot, and so I appreciate that. So I think I can try to articulate that. Would you like to take a shot at that, or?
Well, I mean, I think if I understand what you're trying to get here, Kenneth, the theology behind it, well, and I think, you know, you think very theologically, is when you think about the priesthood of all believers, that's really rooting this. We are a priesthood of all believers. We're not priests over the believers. It's the priesthood of all believers, and yet there is a particular calling for pastors and elders to function in a spiritual leadership. Okay, but we're all the priesthood. So when you try to nuance that in terms of how that works organically and functionally in the body, well, it can be difficult, but the principle still exists. We're all working together. We're making decisions together as the priesthood of all believers, but functionally somebody's going to have to take lead in that. Somebody's going to have to lead the body. There are, you know, when it comes down to it, you know, think of the body. Christ is the head, all right? So, and we're the body, and the elders, I suppose, in one sense, could be kind of look like we're kind of the heart, okay? But, so we're trying to express the head's heart, okay? And the whole body, though, the arms and the feet and the legs, we're all working together, but something has to pump the blood of the body, and so that's how I think of it, because I think that's how the Scripture describes it for us. And so I think we need to let God's Word speak and breathe, even as we think about what this looks like. And I think part of that is just challenging ourselves not to allow the history to dictate how we move forward in the future, but let the Scripture dictate. Let the Scripture inform. And so I that may not be totally satisfying, but that's how I describe it.
I know I can talk to you guys for hours. It's not my intention. It's more just to, you know, it would be helpful for me to understand what you're asking my role to be.
Yeah.
about whether you're asking me to give you input or feel like I'm working with everyone in this room to do something.
Yeah. Well, I think it depends on what the issue is, because that's we are certainly saying we are, you know, in terms when one uses the term congregational and elder-led, they're not necessarily contradictory. There can be these we can draw these lines of what we think congregationalism is and what elder-led is, and yet if you look at Mark Dever's church, he's congregational but he's elder-led, and within congregationalism there are a broad spectrum of what that means. What's the difference? How does congregational function? And one is pure democracy. That is a very rare and I think largely ineffective way to run a church. I don't think it's safe, I don't think it's wise, and I don't think it's good. And we believe that. Just so pure democracy. So we're not that. We are an elder-led church, and we believe if you look at the scriptures, that the majority of the scriptures about elders' role has to do with leadership, spiritual leadership, guidance, guarding doctrine. That's our calling, and that's why the affirmation of leaders that will do that is really, and the qualification of leaders that will do that is the most significant leadership thing we will do for the future of this church, as I said in the first session, making sure that the elders are qualified to guard doctrine, and to teach doctrine, and to shepherd the flock of God. Saying that, I think there is a relationship between the congregation and the elders that Ben is speaking about here that we're growing in, and we want to continue to grow in. And I think you're an example of a person who's done this well. You've written up things for us that we've taken very, very seriously. I mean, and I think that's the kind of relationship we want to have. I'd encourage you to keep doing what you're doing if you're asking me for my counsel. I think you're doing a great job of being a member of this church that's really engaged, thinking theologically, and interacting with us and playing an important role in that. So that's a short answer to a long question. Well, and one more. Let's take one more question, and then we'll...
Well, I just one other, just practically speaking, part of that, the way it's expressed, is by aspiring to be an elder. Members of the Very body good. Stepping forward in faith and obedience to the call of Christ to be a spiritual leader. That's a very practical way that we express this unity as the body of Christ.
So. Okay, well, I think we're at 10:30 now, so I just want to thank you all for being here. This doesn't mean the conversation is over by any means. Please continue to talk to us, continue to dialogue with us, continue to ask questions. If you have things, suggestions for how we can change things, and you want to put them on paper so we can see, because sometimes, you know, we can say, I think this needs to change. It's hard to kind of get your hands around that, but if you want to write something up, we will look at it. As I was speaking about that a little while ago, Will wrote a paper on an area of the church a number of years ago that really addressed a theological deficiency here, and we read that as a pastoral team. We took it very seriously. Now, we don't read everything with that same seriousness because some things are less quality, but when a member's really putting time in and theological thought in, we will take that seriously, and we'll dialogue with you. We respect you, and we appreciate your input on this. So thank you. Thank you very much.